He started toward the wide and graceful staircase. How is she?
Better every day. Upset still, she can't remember what happened, but better. She'll be happy to see you.
Eli walked up, turned at the top of the steps to the east wing. As Carmel predicted, his grandmother sat at the desk, tapping away at her laptop. Back and shoulders ruler straight, he noted, under her tidy green cardigan. Her silver-streaked dark hair stylishly coiffed. No walker, he noted with a shake of his head, but her cane with its silver tip in the shape of a lion leaned against the desk. Rabble-rousing again? He came up behind her, pressed his lips to the top of her head. She just reached up, took his hand.
I've been rousing the rabble all my life. Why stop now? Let me look at you.
She nudged him back while she swiveled in the chair. Those nut-brown eyes studied him without mercy. Then her lips curved, just a little.
Whiskey Beach is good for you. Still too thin, but not so pale, not so sad. You brought me some springtime.
Abra gets the credit. She told me to get them.
You were smart enough to listen to her.
She's the type who rarely, if ever, takes no for an answer. I figure that's why you like her.
Among other reasons.
Her hand reached out, gripped his for a moment.
You are better.
Today.
Today's what we've got. Sit down. You're so damn tall, you're giving me a crick in my neck. Sit and tell me what you've been up to.
Working. Brooding. Feeling sorry for myself, and decided the only thing in that mix that makes me feel like me is working. So I'm going to try to do something to eliminate the need for brooding and self-pity. Hester gave him a satisfied smile.
There now, that's my grandson.
Where's your walker? Her face reset into haughty lines.
I retired it. The doctors put enough hardware in me to hold a battleship together. Physical therapist works me like a drill sergeant. If I can tolerate that, I can damn well get around without an old lady walker.
Are you still hurting?
Here and there, from time to time, and less than I was. I'd say about the same as you. They won't beat us, Eli.
She, too, had lost weight, and the accident, as well as the difficult recovery, had dug more lines into her face. But her eyes were as fierce as ever, and he took comfort in that. I'm starting to believe that. While Eli talked with his grandmother, Duncan pulled his car to the curb, studied the house through the long lens of his camera. Then, lowering it, he took out his recorder to add to his notes for the day. He settled in to wait. 7. Part of the job was boredom. Kirby Duncan slouched in his nondescript sedan, nibbling on carrot sticks. He had a new lady friend, and the potential for sex convinced him to drop 10 pounds. He'd managed 2. He'd moved the car once in the past 2 hours, and considered moving it again. Instinct told him Landon was probably settled in for a while. Family dinner, most likely, as Duncan had snapped shots of the mother, the father, and most recently the sister with husband and toddler in tow. But his job was to sit on Landon, so sit he would. He followed the job into Boston, an easy tale even with traffic, to the building that housed Landon's lawyer. That had given him an opportunity to do a casual walk-around of Landon's car, nothing to see there. Some 90 minutes later, he'd followed Landon around the commons, then tailed him to a high-priced salon, waiting while Landon got a trim. Not that Duncan saw much difference for the 50-plus the snip cost. But it took all kinds, Christ knew. Landon made another stop at a florist, came out loaded. Just a guy running a few errands in the city before he paid a visit to family. Ordinary crap. In fact, as far as Duncan could see, all Landon did was ordinary crap, and not a hell of a lot of that. If the guy killed his wife and got away with it, Landon sure wasn't out celebrating. His report, to date, ran pretty thin. A few walks on the beach, the encounter with the sexy housekeeper, and the woman who'd given Landon a solid squeeze and turned out to be the married mother of three. He figured there was some heat between Landon and the housekeeper, but he couldn't connect them prior to Landon's return to the house at the beach. Still, his background check showed him Abra Walsh had a history of hooking up with violent types, which would make Landon the perfect match, if he bashed the wife's head in, which Duncan had come to doubt. Maybe Landon was her current choice, he thought, but current was key, as he couldn't find one crumb to start a trail cozying the two of them up before the murder. Even the thin report he had didn't hold with the client's insistence Landon was guilty, or with the certainty of Duncan's old friend, Wolfe, one of Boston's finest, that Landon had snapped and bashed his cheating wife's brains in. The longer he watched, the less guilty the poor bastard looked. To draw out information, he tried the direct approach, as with sexy housekeeper, and the more circular style with the clerk at the B&B and a couple others. Just commenting on the big house on the bluff, asking, as any tourist might, about its history, its owners. He'd gotten an earful there about a fortune built initially on booze, from pirate plunder to distilleries to running whiskey during the bad old days of Prohibition. Legends of stolen jewels hidden for generations, family scandals, the expected ghosts, heroes, villains, right up to Eli Landon's scandal. His most entertaining source had been the pretty clerk in a gift shop who'd been happy to spend a half hour on a gloomy pre-season afternoon gossiping with a paying customer. Gossips often stood as a PI's best friend, and Heather Lockaby had been plenty friendly. She felt terrible for Eli, Duncan recalled. Deemed the dead wife a cold, unfriendly snob who couldn't even take the time to pay visits to Eli's elderly grandmother. She'd gone off track with Hester Landon's fall, but he'd reeled her back easily enough. According to the loose-tongued Heather, Landon hadn't lacked for female companionship during his summers and breaks at Whiskey Beach, or during his teens and twenties, in any case. He'd liked to party, suck down beers at the local watering holes, and ride around in his convertible. Nobody, according to Heather, expected him to settle down and get married before he hit 30, and there'd been plenty of speculation about that, which had died off when no baby came along. It was obvious there was trouble in paradise when Eli stopped bringing her to Bluff House, then when he stopped coming. Nobody blinked an eye when word circulated about a divorce. And she personally knew before it came out that the cold fish of a wife was having an affair. It just stood to reason. She didn't blame Eli one bit for being upset and lighting into her. No, she didn't. And if he killed her, and naturally she didn't think that for a minute, she was sure it had been an accident. He didn't ask how smacking a woman on the back of the head with a poker a few times equaled accident, as he'd already dropped $250 on whatnots to keep her talking, and outside of the entertainment value, she'd given him nothing. Still, he found it interesting that at least some of the locals suspected the favored son of murder. And suspicion opened doors. He'd be knocking on them in the days to come and earn his fee. For now, he considered moving on, calling it a day, or at least taking a quick bathroom break. He shifted his numb ass side to side as his cell phone rang.
Duncan,
he shifted again at his client's voice.
As it happens, I'm sitting outside his parents' house on Beacon Hill. He drove into Boston this morning. I'll have a report for you, but...
He shifted butt cheeks again as the client interrupted with a spate of questions.
Yeah, that's right. He's been in Boston all day, met with his lawyer, got a haircut, bought some flowers.
The client paid the bills, he reminded himself as he logged the call in his book.
His sister and her family went in about a half hour ago. Looks like full family visit. Given the timing, I'd say he's here for dinner at least. I don't think there's going to be any more activity here, so I... If that's what you want, I can do that. It's your money,
Duncan thought, and resigned himself to a long evening.
I'll contact you when he comes out.
When the phone clicked in his ear, Duncan shook his head. Clients paid the bills, he thought again, and ate another carrot stick. Maybe he'd been gone only a few weeks, but it felt like a homecoming. Logs snapped and flamed in the big stone fireplace. The old dog Sadie curled in front of it. Everyone sat around what they called the family parlor, with its familiar mix of antiques and family photos, red lilies and a slim vase on the piano, as they might have sat, talked, sipped wine on any evening before the world collapsed. Even his grandmother, who rather than object, had enjoyed having him carry her down the steps and depositing her in her favored wingback chair, chatted away as if nothing had changed. The baby helped, he supposed. Pretty as a gumdrop, fast as lightning, the not-quite-three-year-old Selena just filled the room with energy and fun. She demanded he play, so Eli sat on the floor and helped build a castle out of blocks for her princess doll. A simple thing, an ordinary thing, and something that reminded him he'd once imagined having kids of his own. He thought his parents looked less strained than they did when he left for Whiskey Beach a few weeks before. The ordeal they'd been through had deepened the creases in his father's face, brought a near translucent pallor to his mother's. But they'd never wavered, he thought.
I'm gonna feed this very busy girl.
Eli's sister laid a hand over her husband's for a squeeze as she rose.
Uncle Eli, why don't you give me a hand getting her set up?
Sure. Since Selena, her doll dangling from her fingers, lifted her arms, beamed that irresistible smile, he scooped her up to carry her into the kitchen. The broad-shouldered Alice ruled over the expansive six-burner stove.
Hungry, is she?
Selena immediately deserted Eli, stretching her arms out for the cook.
There's my princess. I've got her,
she told Tricia, expertly securing Selena to the shelf of her hip.
She can eat and keep me company, and Carmel, too, once I tell her we've got our girl to ourselves. We'll have dinner on the table for the rest of you commoners in about 40 minutes.
Thanks, if she gives you any trouble.
Trouble?
Eyes popping comically wide, Alice spoke with exaggerated shock.
Look at that face!
Laughing, Selena wrapped her arms around the cook's neck and gave her a version of a whisper.
Our cookies?
After your dinner,
Alice whispered back.
We're fine,
she made a shooing gesture.
Go relax.
Be good,
Tricia warned her daughter, then took her brother's hand. At nearly 6 feet, with a toughly toned body and a determined will, she easily pulled him out of the kitchen, then away from the parlor toward the library.
I want a minute with you.
I figured. I'm fine. Everything's fine, so...
Just stop.
Unlike their more soft-spoken, diplomatic mother, Tricia took her personality clues from her straight-ahead, flinty, and opinionated paternal grandfather. Which could be why she now served as COO of Land and Whiskey.
We're all being very careful to talk about anything but what happened, what's happening, and how you're dealing with it. And that's fine, but now it's you and me, face to face, no email, which you can carefully compose and edit. What's going on with you, Eli?
I'm writing pretty steadily. I'm taking walks on the beach. I'm eating regular meals because Gran's housekeeper keeps making them.
Abra! She's gorgeous, isn't she?
No, she's interesting. Amused, Tricia sat on the arm of a wide leather chair.
Among other things? I'm glad to hear all that, Eli, because it sounds like just what you should be doing right now. But if it's all going so well, why are you back in Boston?
I can't come in, see my family? What am I, banished? And even then, the way her finger shot up, pointed, reminded him of their grandfather.
Don't evade. You didn't have any plans to come back until Easter, but here you are. Spill it.
It's no big deal. I wanted to talk face to face with Neil. He glanced toward the doorway. Look, I don't want to upset Mom and Dad. There's no point. And I can see they look less stressed. The Piedmonts are making noises about a wrongful death suit.
That's bullshit. Just bullshit. It's straight out harassment at this point, Eli. You should... talk to Neil.
She ended and blew out a breath.
As you did. What does he think?
Oh, he thinks it's noise, at least for now. I told him to hire a new investigator, to find a woman this time.
You're coming back,
Tricia stated, and her eyes filled.
Don't. Jesus, Tricia. It's not just that you are not all together. It's hormones. I'm pregnant. I cried this morning singing Wheels on the Bus with Sally.
Oh. Wow. He felt a grin start up from his feet, straight up through his heart.
That's good, right? It's great. Max and I are thrilled. We're not telling anybody yet, though I think Mom suspects. I'm only about 7 weeks. What the hell?
She sniffed back the tears.
I'll clear it with Max. We'll tell everybody at dinner. Why not make it a celebration?
And keep the topic off me?
Yes. Don't say I never did anything for you.
She rose, wrapped her arms around him.
I'll shift everyone's focus if you promise no more careful emails. Not to me. You tell me when you're having a bad day. If you are, and you want company, I can work it so Sally and I come up for a couple days. Max, if he can manage it. You don't have to be alone.
She would, he thought. Tricia would shuffle, realign, reschedule. She was an expert at it. And she'd do it for him. I'm doing okay. Alone. No offense. I'm figuring things out I let go of for too long.
The offer stands. And we won't wait for one if you're still there this summer. We'll just come. I'll float like the whale I'll be by then and let everybody wait on me.
Typical.
Say that when you haul around an extra 20 pounds and obsess about stretch marks. Go ahead back. I'm just going to peek in and make sure Selena hasn't sweet-talked Alice into those pre-dinner cookies.
At 9 o'clock that evening, Abra finished her at-home yoga class, grabbed a bottle of water as her students rolled up mats.
Sorry I was a little late,
Heather said. Again.
Things just got away from me today.
It's no problem.
I hate missing the warm-up breathing. It always helps me.
Heather let out a sigh, pushed air down with her hands, and made Abra smile. Nothing brought Heather down. She imagined the woman talked in her sleep, just as she did through a 60-minute massage.
I ran out of the house like a maniac,
Heather continued.
Oh, I did notice Eli's car wasn't at Bluff House. Don't tell me he's already gone back to Boston.
No.
Unwilling to leave it at that, Heather zipped up her coat.
I just wondered, it's such a big house. With Hester, well, she's a fixture, if you know what I mean. But I imagine, especially with everything he must have on his mind, Eli just rattles around in that place.
Not that I've noticed.
I know you see him when you go over to take care of the house, so that's some company. But I just think with all that time on his hands, well, he wouldn't know what to do with himself. That can't be healthy.
He's writing a novel, Heather.
Well, I know that's what he says, or that's what people say he says, but he was a lawyer. What does a lawyer know about writing novels?
Oh, I don't know. Ask John Grisham.
Heather opened her mouth, closed it again.
Oh, I guess that's true. But still... Heather, I think it's starting to rain.
Greta Parrish stepped up.
Would you mind giving me a ride home? I think I may have a little cold coming on.
Oh, well, sure I will. Just let me grab my mat.
You owe me, Greta murmured as Heather dashed off.
Big time.
She gave the older woman a grateful squeeze of the hand, then hurried off to look busy stacking mats. The minute her house was empty, she let out a sigh. She loved her at-home classes, the intimacy, the casual conversations before and after. But there were times. After she'd straightened the sunroom, she went upstairs, put on her favorite pajamas, fluffy white sheep frolicking over a pink background, then walked back down. She intended to pour herself some wine, build up the fire, and snuggle in with a book. The sound of rain plopping on her deck made her smile. A rainy night, a fire, a glass of wine.
Rain! Damn it! Had she closed all the windows in Bluff House?
Of course she did. She wouldn't have forgotten to.
Did she?
Absolutely everyone? Like the one in Hester's home gym? Squeezing her eyes tight, she tried to visualize, tried to see herself walking through, securing the windows. But she just couldn't remember. Just couldn't be sure.
Oh, hell, hell, hell!
She wouldn't relax until she'd checked, and it would take only a few minutes. In any case, she'd made that turkey stew earlier. She'd take the container she'd culled out for Eli down with her. She pulled it out of the refrigerator, then took off her cozy socks to stick her feet in her ancient Uggs. She pulled her coat over her PJs, grabbed a hat, and dragging it over her head, jogged out to her car.
5 minutes, 10 tops, then I'm back home with that glass of wine.
She zipped down to Bluff House, unsurprised by a rumble of thunder. Late March equaled crazy in the weather department. Thunder tonight, snow or 60 and sunny tomorrow. Who knew? She made the dash through the rain, heading straight for the front entrance, keys in one hand, turkey stew in the other. She booted the door closed with her hip, reached out to flip the light switch so she could key in the alarm code.
Great. Perfect,
she muttered when the foyer remained dark. She knew all too well the iffy power in Bluff House during a storm, or in Whiskey Beach altogether. She flicked on the little pen light on her keyring and followed the tiny beam to the kitchen. She'd check the windows, then she'd report the power outage, and the fact that the backup generator had failed. Again? She wished Hester would update that old monster. She worried how Hester would get by in a serious power outage, no matter how the woman pointed out she'd been through plenty of them and knew how to hunker down. In the kitchen, she retrieved a full-size flashlight out of the drawer. Maybe she should go down into the basement, check the generator. Of course she didn't know what to check, but maybe. She started for the door, stopped. Dark, cold, potentially damp. Spiders. Maybe not. She'd just leave a note for Eli. If he came home in the middle of the night to no power, no heat, no light, he could bunk on her sofa. But first, she'd check the windows. She hurried upstairs. Naturally, the window she'd worried about was secured, and naturally, now she could clearly remember pulling it shut, flipping the latch. She went back down, turned toward the kitchen. She wasn't easily spooked, but she wanted to get home, wanted out of the big, dark, empty house, and into her own cozy cottage. Thunder rolled again, made her jump this time, made her laugh at herself. The flashlight flew out of her hand when he grabbed her from behind. For an instant, just an instant, full, mindless panic struck. She struggled helplessly, clawing at the arm hooked tight around her neck. She thought of a knife held to her throat, of the blade skipping down her ribs, slicing flesh on the way. Terror shoved the scream from her guts to her throat, where the arm chained it down to a choked wheeze. It cut off her air, had her fighting to draw a breath until the room started to spin. Then survival kicked in. Solar plexus, hard elbow jab, instep, full force stomp, nose, a hard turn as the grip loosened, then a slam with the heel of her hand where instinct told her the face would be. Groin, fast, furious, upward jerk of the knee. Then she ran. Instinct again driving her blindly toward the door. Her hand struck it with enough force to shoot pain up her arms, but she didn't stop. She dragged the door open, ran to her car, dragging her keys out of her pocket with a shaking hand.
Just go, just go, just go!
She hurled herself into the car, jabbed the key in the ignition. Her tires squealed as she threw the car in reverse, then she whipped the wheel, shot it into drive, floored it. Without conscious thought, she drove past her own house, slammed the brakes in front of Maureen's. Light. People. Safety. She ran to the door, shoved it open, stopping only when she saw her friend snuggled up in front of the TV. Both of them lunged to their feet.
Abra! Police!
The room spun again.
Call the police! You hurt! You're bleeding!
Even as Maureen rushed to her, Mike grabbed his phone.
I am? No.
Swaying, she looked down at herself as Maureen grabbed her. She saw the blood on her hoodie, on the pajama top beneath. Not from the knife. No, not this time. Not her blood.
No, it's not mine. It's his. God, was it an accident? Come, sit down.
No, no! Not her blood, she thought again. She'd gotten away. She was safe. And the room stopped spinning.
Someone was in Bluff House. Tell the police someone was in Bluff House. He grabbed me.
Her hand went to her throat.
He was choking me. He hurt you. I can see it. You sit out. Mike!
Cops are coming. Here.
He tucked a throw around Abra when Maureen led her to a chair.
You're okay now. You're safe now. I'm gonna get you some water. Mike's right here.
Maureen told her. He knelt down in front of her. Such a good face, Abra thought as her breathing labored. A caring face with dark puppy dog eyes.
Power's out,
she said almost absently.
No, it's not. At Bluff House, the power's out. It was dark. He was in the dark. I didn't see him.
It's all right. The police are coming and you're all right.
She nodded, staring into those puppy dog eyes.
I'm all right.
Did he hurt you?
He had his arm tight around my throat and my waist, I think. I couldn't breathe, and I got dizzy.
Honey, there's blood on you. Will you let me take a look?
It's his. I hit him in the face. I did sing.
You what?
Sing,
Maureen said as she came in with a glass of water in one hand, a glass of whiskey in the other.
Self-defense. Solar plexus, instep, nose, groin.
Abra, you're a miracle. I didn't think. I just did it. I must have given him a nosebleed. I don't know. I got loose and I ran. I ran out and came here. Oh, I feel a little sick.
Sip some water, slowly.
Okay, all right. I need to call Eli. He needs to know.
I'll take care of it,
Mike told her.
Just give me the number and I'll take care of it.
Abra sipped, breathed, sipped again.
It's on my phone. I didn't take my phone. It's at home.
I'll get it. I'll take care of it.
I didn't let him hurt me. Not this time.
Abra clamped a hand on her mouth as the tears came.
Not this time.
Maureen sat beside her, drew Abra into her arms, and rocked.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Shh. You're okay.
I am okay.
But Abra held tight.
I should be dancing. I didn't fall apart until now. I did everything right. He didn't hurt me. I didn't let him hurt me. Just... it brings it back.
I know.
But that's done.
She eased back, rubbed tears away.
I handled it. But for God's sake, Maureen, somebody broke into Bluff House. I don't know where they were or what they were doing. I didn't notice anything out of place, but I only went up to the gym, into the kitchen. I nearly went into the basement to check the generator, but he could have been down there. He must have cut the power to get in. The power was down. I...
drink this now.
Maureen pushed the whiskey into her hand.
And just take it slow.
Oh, I'm all right.
She took a slow sip of whiskey, breathed out when it ran warm down her sore throat.
Oh, it started to storm, and I couldn't remember if I'd closed all the windows. It nagged me, so I drove down. I just thought the power had gone out. I didn't see him, Maureen, or hear him, not with the rain and the wind.
You made him bleed.
Calmer now, Abra looked down.
I made him bleed. Good for me. I hope I broke his goddamn nose.
I hope so, too. You're my hero.
You're mine. Why do you think I came straight here?
Mike came back in.
He's on his way, he told them. And the police are headed down to Bluff House. They'll be here to talk to you after they do whatever they do.
He walked over, handed Abra a sweatshirt.
I thought you might want this.
Thanks. God, Mike, thanks. You're the best.
That's why I keep them.
After a bolstering pat of her hand on Abra's thigh, Maureen rose.
I'm gonna make coffee.
As she walked out, Mike crossed over to turn off the TV. He sat, took a sip of Abra's whiskey, smiled at her.
"So, how was your day?"
he asked, and made her laugh. 8. Eli made it from Boston to Whiskey Beach in under 2 hours. He'd driven in then out of the teeth of the storm as it blew south. The 20-minute hell he'd navigated in its center helped keep his mind focused. Just drive, he told himself, and don't think outside of the car and the road. Little fingers of fog swirled up from the road as he barreled through the village. Streetlights threw out wavery beams to glisten on puddles, on streams snaking into gutters. Then he was out of the lights, away from the storefronts and restaurants, and taking the curve on the beach road. He yanked the wheel, swung to the shoulder in front of Laughing Gull. Even as he strode toward the narrow front porch, the door in the neighboring cottage opened.
Eli!
He didn't know the man who stepped out, dragging on a light jacket as he crossed the short patch of lawn.
Mike O'Malley, he said as he held out a hand. I've been keeping an eye out for you.
The voice on the phone, of course. Abra.
She's with us.
He gestured toward his house.
She's okay. I mostly just shook her up. There are a couple cops down at Bluff House. You'll want to talk to them.
Later. I want to see Abra.
Back in the kitchen.
Mike led the way. Did he hurt her?
Shook her up.
Mike repeated.
Scared her. He had her in a chokehold, so she's a little raw. But it looks like she hurt him a lot more than he did her. He gave her some bruises, but she made him bleed.
Eli registered the pride in Mike's voice, assumed it was meant to be reassuring, but he wanted to see for himself, needed to see. He heard her voice as they turned out of a cozy living room and into a wide-open kitchen great room. She sat at a table in a baggy blue hooded sweatshirt, thick pink socks on her feet. She looked up. A combination of sympathy and apology on her face. Surprise replaced it when he knelt at her feet, took her hands.
Where's the ring?
Shut up.
He scanned her face, then lifted his fingers gently to the raw marks on her neck. Where else are you hurt?
I'm not.
Her hand squeezed his, in gratitude, in reassurance.
I'm not. He scared me.
Eli looked to Maureen for corroboration.
She's okay. If I didn't think that, she'd be in the ER, whether she liked it or not.
Maureen pushed up, gestured toward the coffee pot and whiskey bottle that stood side by side.
Which do you want, or a combination thereof?
Coffee, thanks.
I'm sorry we had to call you. Sorry we had to upset your family,
Abra began. They're not upset. I told them the power was out and I wanted to come back and check on things. I decided to come back tonight anyway.
Good. There's no point in them worrying. I don't know if anything was taken,
Abra continued.
The police said nothing looked out of place, but what do they know? These two wouldn't let me go down and walk through. Maureen's pretty scary when she's in protective mode.
If there was a burglary and something was taken, what would you do about it?
Maureen stopped, held up her hands to Eli.
Sorry, we've been in that loop for the last half hour.
She handed Eli coffee. Before she could offer milk or sugar, he downed half of it black. I'll go down, talk to the cops, take a look.
I'll go with you. First,
Abra said when Maureen started to protest.
I defended myself, didn't I? Second, I'll have police and Eli. Third, I know more about what's in the house and where it goes than anybody but Hester. Who isn't here? And last?
She rose, hugged Maureen fiercely.
Thanks, not only for the socks, but for looking out for me. Thanks.
She turned to hug Mike in turn.
Come back here and sleep in the guest room.
Maureen insisted.
Sweetie, the only reason that asshole was interested in me was because I came into the house when he thought he had it to himself. He's not going to come sneaking into mine. I'll see you tomorrow.
I'll make sure she's all right, Eli said. Thanks for the coffee and everything else.
She's got mom worry genes,
Abra told him when she stepped outside with Eli.
We all know this wasn't about me.
You were the one attacked, so it's very much about you. I'm driving.
I'll follow you in my car. Otherwise, you'll just have to drive me back.
That's right. He took her arm, steered her to his car.
Fine. Everyone's got mom worry genes tonight.
Tell me what happened. Mike didn't give me the details.
When the storm rolled in, I couldn't remember if I'd closed all your windows. I aired out the house today, and I couldn't remember if I closed the window in Hester's gym. It nagged at me, so I went down to check. Oh, I took a container of turkey stew, with dumplings, down while I was at it.
Speaking of mom genes...
I prefer helpful neighbor genes. The power was out. I feel stupid now, as I didn't think twice about it. Or the fact that it hadn't been out in the area, at least not 5 seconds earlier. I was just annoyed. I used my little flashlight to go back to the kitchen, got a bigger one.
She let out a huff of breath.
I didn't hear anything. Didn't feel anything, which pisses me off, as I like to think I've got this little sixth sense thing going on. Major fail on that tonight. So I went upstairs, and of course I had closed the window. Then I came down again, nixed the idea of going into the basement to see if I could get that old generator running, which, even eliminating spiders, dark, spooky, I don't know the first thing about generators. Then he had me.
From behind?
Yes. And there was thunder, and the rain and wind. But still, I hate knowing I didn't hear or feel anything until he grabbed me. After my initial panic, kicking, clawing at his arm...
Skin or cloth?
Cloth.
Little details, she acknowledged. The former criminal attorney would think of them, just as the police had.
Wool, I think? Soft wool, sweater, or coat. My mind wasn't that sharp as my air supply was cut off. Lucky for me, without consciously thinking, I went into defense mode. I taught some classes on it. Sing, that's...
I know what it is. You remembered how to use it?
Some part of me did. I told the police this already.
She said when he pulled up at Bluff House.
I jammed back with my elbow, and it took him by surprise, and hurt him, at least a little. Enough, his grip loosened some, because I could breathe. I stomped on his foot, which probably didn't hurt as much as throw him off, since I was wearing Uggs. Then I swung around and aimed toward his face. I couldn't see it in the dark, but had the sense of it. Heel of the hand. Then the coup de grace.
Knee to the balls.
And I know that hurt him. I didn't really register it at the time, as I was running like a maniac for the door, for my car, but I'm pretty sure I heard him go down. And the nose shot worked, too, because he bled on me.
You're pretty calm about it.
Now, you didn't see me curled up in Maureen's arms, crying like a baby.
But the idea of it tightened every muscle in his body. I'm sorry about this, Abra.
Me too, but it's not your fault, and it's not mine.
She got out of the car, smiled at the deputy who approached.
Hi, Vinny. Eli, this is Deputy Hansen.
Eli, you probably don't remember me.
Yeah, I do. The hair was shorter and brown rather than bleached blonde, the face fuller, but Eli remembered. Surfer dude. Vinny laughed.
Still am when I can grab a board and a wave. Sorry for the trouble here.
So am I. How'd he get in?
He cut the power, shorted it out, and jimmied the side door, the one going into the laundry room. So he knew or suspected there was an alarm. Abra said you left late this morning, went into Boston?
That's right.
So your car wasn't here all day into the evening. You can take a look around, see if there's anything missing. We called the power company, but they're probably not going to get on this until tomorrow.
Soon enough.
We didn't find any vandalism.
Vinny continued as he led the way.
We got some blood on the floor right in the foyer, and on Abra's pajama top and hoodie. It's enough for DNA if he's in the system, or if we get him, but that's not going to be quick.
He opened the front door, shone his light, then picked up the flashlight Abra had dropped, and he'd already set on a table in the foyer.
We get a break-in now and then on rental cottages empty during the off-season, but that's mostly kids looking for a place to hang out, have sex, smoke dope, or, at worst, vandalize or steal some electronics. This doesn't look like kids. None of the local boys would risk Bluff House, for one thing.
Kirby Duncan, Boston PI, he's been poking around asking questions about me.
It wasn't him,
Abra said, but Vinny took out his book, noted down the name. It was dark. You didn't see his face.
No, but I had an up-close and personal with his build. Duncan's soft in the middle, paunchy, and this man wasn't. And Duncan's shorter, more beefy.
Still,
Vinny tucked his book away again.
We'll talk to him.
He's at Surfside B&B.
I poked around,
Abra explained.
We'll check it out. There's some easily portable valuables in the house and electronics. You've got a nice laptop upstairs. There's flat-screen TVs. I imagine Ms. Hester's got jewelry in a safe. Maybe had some cash sitting around?
Yeah, some. Eli took the kitchen flashlight, started upstairs. He checked the office first, booted up his laptop. If Duncan had been after anything, he suspected it would be a look at his personal email, files, web history, so he ran a quick diagnostic.
Nothing since I shut it down this morning. Oh, that shows.
He opened drawers, shook his head. Doesn't look like anything's been gone through. Nothing's missing in here. Eli walked out and into his bedroom. He opened a drawer, saw the couple hundred in cash he kept for easy access.
If he was up here,
Eli said as he shone the light, turned a circle. He left everything just the way I did.
It could be Abra interrupted him before he got started. Look, you should take your time. Take a good look around. You may want to wait until you got some light. We'll be doing drive-bys, but he'd be pretty damn stupid to come back at this point. It's late, Vinny added, but I don't have a problem rousting a private investigator out of bed. I'll follow up with you tomorrow, Eli. You want to lift home, Abra?
No, thanks. You go ahead.
With a nod, he took out a card.
Abra's got one, but keep this around. You call me if you find anything missing or have any more trouble. And if you pick up a board, we could see if you remember any of those lessons I gave you back in the day.
In March? The water's freaking freezing.
That's why real men wear wetsuits. I'll keep in touch.
He hasn't changed much, Eli commented when Vinny's footsteps receded. Well, the hair. I guess bleached out shoulder length isn't police issue.
But I bet it was cute on him.
You know each other? Before tonight, I mean?
Yeah, he lost a bet with his wife last year and had to take one of my yoga classes. Now he's a semi-regular.
Vinny's married?
With 1.5 kids. They live down in South Point and throw exceptional barbecues.
Maybe Vinny had changed, Eli thought as he continued to scan the room. He remembered a rail thin guy, perpetually high, who'd lived for the next wave and dreamed of moving to Hawaii. The beam passed over the bed, then came back to shine on the hand towel, the pipe-smoking fish.
Really?
I'm going to see if I can manage a guard dog next. Maybe a Rottweiler or a Doberman. Maybe it'll work.
You're going to need a bigger towel. He scanned her face in the dim light. You've got to be tired. I'll take you home.
More wired than tired. I should have skipped the coffee. Look, you shouldn't stay here without any power. It's going to get colder and no lights, no pumps, so no water. I've got a more or less guest room and a really comfortable sofa. You can take either.
No, that's okay. I don't want to leave the house empty after this. I'm going to go down and bang on the generator.
All right. I'll go down, too. Make girl noises and hand you inappropriate tools.
You're gawky yet, but you should be able to stomp on any spiders.
It's wrong, I know, considering the good work they do, but I have a thing about spiders.
I can make manly noises and get my own inappropriate tools.
You should get some sleep.
I'm not ready.
She gave a kind of shaking shrug.
Unless you have strong objections to my company down there, I'd rather stick around. Especially if I can have a glass of wine.
Sure. He suspected, whatever she'd said to Maureen, she had nerves about being alone in her own house.
We'll both get drunk and bang on the generator.
That's the plan. I did a kind of half-ass cleaning down there before you came, at least in the main area, the wine cellar, seasonal storage. I don't really go beyond there, and I don't think Hester has any ears. The rest of the place is huge and dark, dank, and just pretty scary,
she told him as they started downstairs.
It's not my favorite place.
Spooky?
He said, and turned the flashlight under his chin for a horror movie effect.
Yes, and stop that. The furnaces make grunting and grinding noises. Things clang and creak, and there's too many strange little rooms and spaces. It's the shining of basements, so...
She stopped in the kitchen, got out the wine herself.
courage from the grape, which may also counteract the very late-night coffee and adventure. How is everything at home in Boston?
It was good, really. If she needed to talk about something else, he could talk about something else. Gran looked stronger, my parents looked less stressed, and my sister's expecting her second child, so there was something to celebrate.
That's wonderful.
It switched the gears, if you know what I mean, he said as she poured wine for both of them. Instead of being careful not to talk about why I moved here, we stopped thinking about it.
To fresh starts, new babies, and electricity.
She tapped her glass against his. After one sip, she decided to take the bottle down to the basement. Maybe she would get a little drunk. It might help her sleep. The basement door creaked. Naturally, she thought, and hooked a finger in one of Eli's belt loops as he started down.
So we don't get separated,
she said when he glanced back. It's not the Amazon.
In basement terms, it is. Most houses around here don't even have basements, much less Amazon basements.
Most aren't built on a cliff, and part of it's above ground level.
A basement's a basement, and this one's too quiet.
I thought it made too many noises.
It can't make them without the furnaces, the pumps, and God knows what other intestines are down here. So it's too quiet. It's waiting.
Okay, you're starting to freak me out.
I don't want to be freaked out alone.
At the base of the steps, Eli took a flashlight from its wall charger in a well-stocked and meticulously organized wine cellar. There'd been a day, he imagined, when every niche would have held a bottle, the hundreds of them systematically turned by the butler. But even now, he calculated a solid 100 bottles of what would be exceptional wines. Here, now, if we get separated, you can send me a signal. I'll get the search party. She released his belt loop, turned on the flashlight he gave her.
Like caves.
That's how she thought of Bluff House's basement. A series of caves. Some of the walls were the old stone where the builders had simply carved through. There were passages and low archways, section to section. Normally she could have flipped switches and flooded it with welcome light, but now her beam shimmered and crossed with Eli's.
Like Scully and Mulder,
she commented. The truth is out there. Appreciating him, she smiled and stayed close behind him as he ducked an archway, turned left, and stopped, with Abra bumping into him.
Sorry.
Eli shone the light on the chipped red paint of the mammoth machine.
It looks like something from another world.
Another time, anyway. Why haven't we updated this? Haven't we hardwired a new generator into the house?
Hester didn't mind power outages. She said they helped remind her to be self-sufficient. And she liked the quiet. She's well-stocked with batteries, candles, wood, canned goods, and so on.
She's going to be self-sufficient with a new, reliable generator after this. Maybe this bitch is just out of gas. He gave it a light kick. He took a glug of wine, set the glass down on another utility shelf, and crouching down, opened a 5-gallon gas can. Okay, we've got gas here. Let's check the creature from another world. Abra watched him circle behind it.
Do you know how it works?
Yeah, we've gone up against each other a few times. It's been a while, but you don't forget. He looked back at her. His eyes widened as he aimed the light on her left shoulder. She jumped, spun around in circles, glass in one hand, bottle in the other.
Is it on me? Is it on me? Get it off!
She stopped when he laughed, full, deep, helpless laughter that struck a wonderful and warm chord inside her, even as it infuriated.
Damn it, Eli! Ooh, what is it with men? You're all such children!
You took out an intruder, in the dark, alone. Then you squeal like a girl over an imaginary spider.
I am a girl, so I naturally squeal like one.
She topped off her glass, drank.
That was mean.
But funny. He gripped the gas cap on the generator, twisted, got nothing. He rolled his shoulders, tried again.
Suck it. Want me to loosen it for you?
big boy?
She fluttered her lashes. Go ahead, yoga girl. She flexed her biceps, came around with him so they stood hip to hip. After two mighty attempts, she stepped back.
Ah, apologies. It's obviously welded on.
No, it's rusted and old, and whoever put it on last time was showing off. I need a wrench.
Where are you going?
He stopped, turned back. Tool department's back here, or it used to be.
I don't want to go back there.
I can get the wrench all by myself. She didn't much want to stay where she was alone, either, but couldn't bring herself to admit it.
Well, keep talking, and don't make any stupid gagging or choking or screaming sounds. I won't be impressed.
If the basement monster attacks, I'll fight him off in silence.
Just keep talking,
she insisted as he walked deeper into the dark.
When did you lose your virginity?
What?
It's the first thing that came to my mind. I don't know why. I'll go first. The night of my senior prom. It's a cliche for a reason. I thought it was forever, Trevor Bennington and I. It was 2.5 months, 6 if you count pre-sex. Eli?
Right here. Who dumped whom?
Oh, we just drifted apart, which is unsatisfying. We should have had some drama, some deception and fury.
Not all it's cracked up to be.
His voice echoed eerily, making Abra turn to Ujjayi breathing as she skimmed her flashlight around the area. She heard a kind of thump, a curse.
Eli?
Damn it! What's that doing here?
Don't be funny!
I just wrapped my damn shit on a damn wheelbarrow because it's sitting in the middle of the damn floor and...
Are you hurt? Eli?
Come back here, Abra.
I don't wanna.
There's no spiders. I need you to see this.
Oh, God.
She inched her way along.
Is it alive?
No, nothing like that.
If this is a stupid boy trick, I'm going to be very unamused.
She breathed easier when her light hit him.
What is it?
It's that. He pointed with his light. The floor. A combination of packed earth and stone gaped open. The trench ran nearly wall to wall, as wide as 6 feet, as deep as 3.
What? Was something buried there?
Somebody obviously thinks so.
Like a body?
I'd say a body's more likely to be buried than disinterred in a basement.
Why would anyone dig down here? Esther never said anything about excavation.
She ran her light over a pickaxe, shovels, buckets, a sledgehammer.
It would take forever to dig in this ground with hand tools.
Power tools make noise.
Yes, but... Oh, my God. That's what this was about tonight? Coming down here to dig for... whatever? The legend? Esmeralda's dowry? That's ridiculous. And that has to be it.
Then he's wasting time and effort. For Christ's sake, if there was treasure, don't you think we'd know or have found it by now?
Well, I'm not saying...
Sorry. He paced away. All this wasn't done just tonight. This is weeks of work, a few hours at a time.
Then he's been down here before. But he cut the power, Jimmy the door. Hester changed the alarm code,
Abra remembered.
She asked me to change the code when she got out of the hospital. She was upset and it didn't make any sense at the time, but she insisted. A new code and to rekey the locks. I just did it about a week before you moved in.
She didn't just fall. The sudden certainty of it punched like a fist. The son of a bitch. Did he push her? Trip her? Just scare her so she lost her footing? Then he left her there? He left her on the floor.
We need to call Vinny.
I can wait till morning. This isn't going anywhere. I turned the wrong way to get the wrench. I got mixed up. It's been years since I've been down here, and I went the wrong way. We used to scare ourselves spitless in here when we were kids. It's the oldest part of the house. Listen. When he fell silent, she heard it clearly. The grumble of wave over rock. The moan of wind. Sounds like people. Dead people, we think. Pirate ghosts, and dead witches from Salem, whatever.
I can't remember the last time I was back this far. Gran wouldn't come back here. She didn't keep anything back here. I just turned the wrong way. Otherwise, I might never have found this.
Let's get out of here, Eli.
Yeah. He led her out, stopped before the first turn to pluck an old adjustable wrench from a shelf.
It's the jewels, Eli.
She insisted as they picked their way back to the generator.
It's the only thing that makes sense. You don't have to believe they exist. He does. Legend deems them priceless. Diamonds, rubies, emeralds. Flawless, magical, exquisite. And gold, a queen's ransom.
A rich duke's daughter's ransom, if you want to be accurate. He fought off the gas cap with a wrench. They existed and would probably be worth a few million. A lot of millions at this point. Are also somewhere at the bottom of the ocean with the ship, the crew, and the rest of the booty. He peered in, shining the light. Dry as an old virgin's... as dust, he corrected.
Sorry. You were about to be very vulgar.
She held the light while he filled the tank. Picked up her glass and held the light while he fiddled with switches. Some kind of gauge. He punched the power button. The machine belched, farted, coughed. Eli went through the routine again, then a third time, and it caught.
Let there be light,
she announced. In a few well-selected locations. He took the glass she offered him, and his hand brushed hers.
Jesus, Abra, you're freezing.
Imagine that, in a damp, unheated basement.
Let's get upstairs. I'll get a fire started. Instinctively, he wrapped an arm around her shoulders. And, instinctively, she leaned into him as they walked.
Eli, I don't want to believe it, but could whoever did this be local? They had to know you weren't at home. They couldn't have risked cutting the power and breaking in if you were here. And it was early, really, not long after 9:30.
I don't know the locals the way I used to, but I know there's a PI at one of the local B&Bs. It'd be his job to know I wasn't here.
It wasn't him, I'm sure of it.
Maybe not, but he's working for someone, isn't he?
Yes. Yes, he is. Or with someone. Do you really think he, or they, hurt Hester?
She started downstairs in the middle of the night. None of us could ever figure out why. I'm going to start looking at this, all of this, from a different angle. In the morning, he added as they reached the kitchen. He set down the flashlight, the glass, then rubbed her arms. It's colder in the Amazon than I thought. She laughed, shook her hair back, lifted her face. They stood, bodies close, his hand slowing to a stroke instead of a rub. She felt the flutter in her belly, one she'd ignored since she began her sexual fast, and the lovely rise of heat behind it. She watched his eyes change, deepen, flick down and linger on her lips before coming back to hers. And, drawn, she leaned toward him. He stepped back, dropped his hands.
Bad timing,
he said.
Is it?
Bad timing. Trauma, upset, wine. Let me get a fire started. You can warm the chill off before I take you home.
All right. But tell me it cost you a little.
A lot. For another moment, his eyes stayed steady on hers. A hell of a lot. That was something, she supposed, as he walked away. She took another sip of wine, even as she wished they'd chosen another way to warm the chill off. 9. When Kirby Duncan closed the door after the county deputy left, he walked straight to the bottle of Stoli on the windowsill, poured two fingers.
Son of a bitch,
he thought as he downed it. It was a damn good thing he'd had receipts, one for a fancy coffee a few blocks from the Landon House, and another for gas and a ham and cheese at a pit stop a few miles south of Whiskey Beach. Once he determined Landon had been driving home, he pulled off to fuel up the car and himself. Damn good thing. The receipts proved he hadn't been anywhere near Bluff House at the time of the break-in. Otherwise, he was damn near sure he'd have been explaining himself to the local cops
in-house.
Son of a bitch.
Could be coincidence, he thought. Somebody just happens to pick the exact night he reports.